Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing well, doing great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
So excited. Couldn't unmute the mic. We are off to a riveting start on this episode of The Dunker Spot. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Yeah, I definitely forgot how to hit the mute button. We are off to a rocking start today.
Oh, man. Much like the start the Miami Heat got off to in game four, but we will get to that a little bit later. How's the weekend, sir?
It was good, man. How was yours?
Pretty solid. Jam-packed. My phone was on fire for like 48 straight hours, so that was fun.
Did you just ask me how my weekend was so you could redo a victory lap?
No, I didn't.
Because you did some post-ups on Friday?
No, not at all. I asked you about your weekend because I was genuinely curious about your weekend.
Congratulations, Nikaias, on being amazing and being on the low post. You are incredible, sir.
What is that?
With that being said, no, I'm joking.
Oh, brother. No, it was a fun basketball weekend. Just a fun weekend overall. And then we got the games on Monday. But we'll, again, get into that a little bit later. What W games did you watch this weekend?
Caught a little Aces Mercury. Caught a little Sky Mystics. Had some fun with both of them. I know we're here to talk about the Aces, who are currently up on the Sparks 74-43.
Yeah.
I think they were 11 for 17 from three in the first half, which is kind of wild for a team that averaged, what, like 12 attempts last year?
Yes.
All right. So the most important thing is you have to know your teammates. And I know Nikaias been waiting to say reckless things about the Aces for years. So we call ISO.
It's going to be a relatively short ISO, but these Aces are fun, man. These Aces are fun. I also caught the Aces Mercury game over the weekend. In the first half, not great. As I've been on the WUGO Aces train, you have expertly pointed out, like, hey, this team has some things to work out in the half court. There's still some stretches where they're in the mud a bit, trying to figure out some things. And that was very much the case in the first half of that game. Just shout out to the Mercury with their pressure. Just some tempo things with the Aces, which was weird. Just could not really establish a flow. A lot of late clock attempts. And then the third quarter happened, and Kelsey Plum lost her mind, and Jackie Young continued to lose her mind, and Chelsea Gray made tough shots, and they were able to force some misses on the Mercury and then get out in transition, and then it just snowballed, and the next thing you know, the Aces are up 20-plus. It's like, well, this is what they can do to you. Like, at worst, they're a team that can force you into tough shots and get out on the break. And so you alleviate some of your half-court concerns if you're not operating in the half-court. As far as what's happening right now, we're recording during the Aces-Sparks game. I'll be nice. The Aces are just really, really good when they're humming. They're really good when they're able to bomb away from three. There were some pockets to attack in order to generate some open threes. I think that's a way to phrase that. But yeah, like, if this is what they're going to do from three, I don't know what you do. Like, they have the WNBA's best offensive rating right now. They have one of the top offensive ratings of all time. Obviously, small sample right now. We're early in the season, so we'll see how that goes. But if they're still in the tinkering phase, and this is really your first big Asia half of the season, and she knocked down a couple of threes too, which, buddy, sign me up. Sign me up. But if they're doing this without really working Asia in the way that we're accustomed to yet, if they haven't figured it out, I don't know what you do with this offense.
You hope and you pray at this point. And my concern, I think concern is probably too strong of a word, but my thought process is the half-court offense with them. Sometimes the tempo gets bad. They get up as the clock, doesn't look the same. Looks kind of grindish. But when they are playing with flow, and you have those guards playing that unlocked, like Kelsey Plum has been unlocked. Mm-hmm. Becky Young has been unlocked. Chelsea Gray's still doing things. So you have this blend with the movement, with the drive and kick. It makes it tough. And they're letting it fly. So you don't know if it's going to be a shot based on the rotation. You don't know if it's going to be a drive. And that makes it tough. What I've liked the most about the Aces is the defense, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
The versatility they've shown scheme-wise. I mean, this is a team that may keep it on the side. They may go under. They may switch. Active on ball, active off-ball actions. That allows them to get out and run. And so when they put all that together, it's tough. It's just going to be how many times they're going to be tested. What do you do when the threes aren't falling? What do you do when the defense is prepared? That's what I'm looking to see. But so far, so good. They are at the top for a reason. Just ask the Sparks.
Yeah, are the Sparks okay? Like, we talked about this a little bit with...
No, they're not. They're not. We talked about the offensive flow, and it's either very set heavy or it's very my turn, your turn heavy based on the talent. And it's very dot, dot, dot. We did one thing, and now we're going to watch and maybe do another thing. But the pieces just haven't come together. The lineups haven't come together, and they're trying to figure it out on the fly. Match that with some defensive issues, and you get a blend that doesn't make it easy.
Yeah. Not the blend you want if you're the Sparks. I'm excited about this team, man. Not the Sparks. I mean, I'm sure they'll figure some stuff out, but the Aces are fun. I am... Let's start the most improved train for Jackie Young. But let's go ahead and get that going. It's a pretty talented field out there, though. I mean, she's there. Ezzy Mabagor is obviously there. But what Jackie's been able to do, the way she's been able to operate in the mid-range, the way she's been able to get downhill. One concern I did have, particularly in the first half of the Mercury game, they just gapped her on offense. Like, all right, cool. She's on the weak side. That's the person we're going to help all the way off on. You got an Asia post up. She has someone sitting in her lap. If you have a drive from Chelsea Gray or from Kelsey Plum, we're going to sit here. We're going to dare Jackie Young to knock down threes. And so she does have to, one, knock down the shots. That would be helpful. But she can't get hesitant, because I do think with De'Erica Hamby also starting at the four, like, she's not a great shooter either. And if the Aces get to the point to where Jackie isn't knocking down the shots or isn't taking the shots at all, that's going to make it a little bit easier to bring them in the mud. And that kind of goes back into what you were mentioning a little bit earlier. And to make the tempo a little bit more important. And so that's something to keep an eye on. But for right now, like, she's knocking down shots. She's playing with incredible aggression. She's being decisive with the ball. And with all the talent that the Aces have on the floor at one time, like, she's seeing your third best perimeter defender, which is wild to say. Like, it's just a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying this team right now. You did mention the Sky and the Mystics. What was your primary takeaway in that one?
I thought the Sky sent a message. Just a nice little reminder of who we are and what we can do. Because let me tell you, lost in this beginning of the season for the Sky was the fact that someone was missing.
The finals MVP? Is that where we're at?
And with Copper back, yeah, 12 points, 11 shots. That impact is different. That starting lineup is incredibly difficult to deal with. If you have to deal with the playmaking of Vandersloot, the shooting of Quigley, and now the flow they could have with all five out there, you can run pick and roll, pick and pop with either part Candace or Miesman. You can flow right into second side action. You don't know where the cut's coming. And, oh, yeah, we got to deal with Copper if the ball swings that way. That's a lot to deal with. That makes a difference. That is tough. Side note, shout out to Candace Parker for getting that triple-double. She was going to get that no matter what.
Yes.
There was no way on earth she was leaving that building without that triple-double. But nah, I mean, you saw the versatility of what the Sky can do. You saw the spacing. You saw the drive and kick. You saw the pressure they can generate. And a reminder, in that championship run, the defense can pretty strong. Up. And when that defense is locked in, the help is in early. They're recovering. They put that on you. Now they're pushing, playing with tempo and flow. It looks different, you know? So to me, the offensive flow stood out. I think there was a play where Quigley came off a screen from Miesman. It was a pop. then Candace Parker cut, swing to Vandersloot, swing to Copper three in like 10 seconds. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, the sky's still there. I thought the Mystics were game. It was just a reminder for them. I thought their tempo was a little bit slow offensively. Mm-hmm. And then you could tell how much they need their defense to set the table for them, as opposed to being a major component. Although Austin really continues to impress me, and her playing with Della Don, that role with EDD spaced is tough.
Shakira Austin is the goods already. She is having a phenomenal rookie season to start. I am glad that you mentioned the defense for the Mystics and it needing to hold up, because it was very good in the first half. And then you very slowly started seeing some cracks, some chinks in the armor. And with the flow that you mentioned with Chicago, like once they found, like, nerdy thing, but like in the first half, particularly the first quarter, watching the Mystics and the Sky go back and forth for like empty corner actions, and both of them were like, okay, well, we got an under here, we got a switch here, we're showing high here, this is a turnover, this is a missed shot, this is a stall possession. I was like, oh, both of these teams, when healthy, are used to just picking teams apart, and now just kind of mirroring each other, like, oh, we can't really generate an advantage, we have to do something else now. And then slowly Chicago started getting it done, and now it's Candace rolling, now it's Miesemann rolling. Now it's a switch, and now we're driving it. Now it's a switch, it's a quick post up. Now help's coming, ball swing to the opposite side. And it's just like, to your point, like, oh, yeah, this is what the Sky looked like when they're humming. And the fourth quarter in particular, the Mystics just couldn't. There were so many coverage busts at that point. Like, one, let's just talk about the run that the Sky went on, like, mid-third quarter to early fourth quarter. They just completely blew the game open. Like the blend of defense, transition play, and then again, just playing with a little bit more tempo in the half court and getting going that way. It just came in waves. And I was really impressed with what the Sky were able to do on that front. But good game overall. You mentioned Shakira Austin. Rui popped on the screen for me again. But she is so fun to watch, man. I thought she had a nutmeg. I had to roll back up. Pick and roll possession of hers early, like four times. Like, oh no, it just went right by. I can't remember who the players was. Went right by her shin. I was like, wow. The fact that it looked that close, just a brilliantly timed pocket pass for a roll. I'm just like, yo, this is the good stuff right here.
The defense, the passing, the activity, fearlessness, speed. Ooh, there's only one Rui in Washington. I'm sorry.
It is written. What did you tag me in? What is
I did an Aces clip, man. Trying to show some love for you, man. Okay. Trying to show some love, man. I'm excited for you. You were on the low post. Posting and toasting.
Oh, wow.
Well deserved. Let's go. Let's get it.
I appreciate you, good sir. Also, the Aces are absolutely incredible. Also, just quick shout out to the Dallas Wings, who are playing 300 miles per hour on offense, and I don't know how I feel about that yet. Arike's bombing away. Marina Mabry is shooting the leather off the ball right now. Very fun backcourt. Very fun things happening in Dallas. Not sure if there are very good things happening in Dallas yet, but very fun things at the very least. Want to give them a quick shout. Let's move to the NBA very quickly before we get into the conference finals games over the weekend and on Monday as we record late. Some NBA news. Tim Connelly, no longer with the Denver Nuggets. A 5-year, $40-plus million deal to take over things in Minnesota. How are we feeling about that?
I mean, congratulations to him. I was a little confused by it all until I saw two words: ownership equity. Mm-hmm. And that was a wrap for me.
That's all you need to see.
Got 5 years and equity? Yeah. You can see why he took a couple days to think that one over. But that, if you're going to get that and put yourself in that kind of position, that's hard to deny, especially in this league where that doesn't come very often. Mm-hmm. It's very rare. So the Nuggets were kind of handicapped on that one, to me at least. Mm-hmm. So I know, I'm sure it's out there. Well, how come they can't keep their people? That's a tough offer to beat. Hey, we're going to make you one of the top paid executives and also. Mm-hmm. So, hey, I can figure it out with Anthony Edwards and Cap.
So one, props to Tim Connelly. Helped build a tremendous team in Denver, particularly when healthy. To your point, equity's hard to beat. And you mentioned Cat and Anthony Edwards. What's been kind of funny to me, and I'm going to write about it, what's been funny to me is like watching the story unfold through these like sources, pieces and stuff. It's like, oh, they're talking about this. This is getting serious. They're talking contract offers and stuff. And every time the Wolves young core is brought up, it is Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, and then Jaden McDaniel, and then Jared Vanderbilt. And I'm just like, there's a name missing here.
Patrick Beverly?
Yeah, that's the one. Like, there's a name missing here intentionally across multiple reports. And I'm just like, huh.
Jordan McLaughlin?
Yeah. Jalen Noel, restricted free agent. I wonder if they're going to bring him back. I'm just like, yo, that's kind of weird. And like these are pieces coming from like Sham. Like, that's not an accident. Especially when it's across multiple pieces, multiple tweets. Like, I feel like some tea leaves are being read right now on that front. And I am curious to see how that plays out. Also, I hope Calvin Booth's ready. From everything I've read, the brass loves him. And so I hope he's ready to step into that job and keep things rolling in Denver.
I got no doubts there. Last time they replaced the chair, went all right.
Yep.
So I think he's ready. I think he's put the work in to take this opportunity to the next level. But again, with Connelly, man, if the owner says, yo, come over here, and I got some equity,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
just kind of be like, all right. I feel that. I'm curious to see how that plays out. Quick shout out to the Orlando Magic for winning the draft lottery. I guess we'll get into some draft stuff later this summer. We shall see. Let's talk to playoff basketball. Since we were recording late on the Monday night, we can start with the Boston Celtics absolutely blasting the Miami Heat 102-82 in a game that really wasn't that close. I'll go broad for now. The Heat were able to win game three, 109-103. And then this game happened for Boston. So, Steve, what changed between games three and game four for the Boston Celtics?
What changed? Everything changed. This whole series is all over the place. None of it makes sense. It's just a mashup, a collective series of moments where I'm trying to analyze everything. And it kind of just comes down to, yo, whose defense is really good? Because whoever's defense is really good, probably going to win. The other team can't score. That's the end of that game. Let's move to the next. But and jokes aside, like, I don't know. Marcus Smart is in. He had that moment. And then he's out. So, hey, we can attack Peyton Pritchard. But no Tyler Hero. So that means more Victor Oladipo. But also, wait, Robert Williams is back. So now you got to remember what happened last time he played. But, oh, yeah, Jimmy Butler's back. So you got to remember what happened last time he played with Peyton Pritchard. And then Bam did stuff the game before. But also Jaylen Brown did stuff the game before. And Jason Tatum's really good. And Al Horford is pretty good at defense. So .. good luck. I think. Right? Right?
Yeah.
That's series that's in a nutshell. I don't understand. This series is like a collective of moments, but you also have to try and remember what actually happened. So in game three, you saw the impact of Kyle Lowry coming back. That was great. They could switch five. Everything looked great. Bam was aggressive, unlocked, transition. I'm coming right at you. And then they were able to open things up for him in pick and roll, even against the drop. That was phenomenal. Boston kind of hung around, tried to make a run. Simplifying it, but that was that. Game four, Robert Williams returned. And he was great. And there's a couple things he did that I want to point out. But number one, I thought Al Horford set the tone right off the bat.
First possession.
Yeah. First play of the game is for Bam Adebayo. And a key for Miami is, hey, we need to keep Bam Adebayo aggressive. Cross screen, Al Horford pushes that catch out to the three-point line, plays a drop in the pick and roll, gets a strip. Thought that changed a lot. Number two, And this is probably the quote unquote series concern that I pulled from this game. Miami cannot let Boston play drop with that too big lineup and also them have the small lineup that could switch everything. That's going to cause a massive issue. Because if Al Horford could just comfortably drop knowing, hey, Robert Williams is going to be wherever I need him to be, which he was, because it didn't matter where PJ Tucker was. Robert Williams was
right.
You want to go empty side? I'm right here. You want to do a rescreen? I'm still right here. You want to put PJ on the wing? Hey, guess where I'm at? Right in the paint where Bam wants to catch it. I'm in the pocket. That's where the disruption came. I thought Al set the tone there. And I thought Miami just right off the bat could not find the pressure point because of the drop.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because that's what they unlocked the game before. Derek White had enough of y'all.
But, hey, can we talk about his screen navigation in this game?
Go ahead.
I just want to chip in what you're saying. You were killing it. But no, I just want to quickly point out, he blew up just about anything Miami wanted to do. Because you talk about Boston being in the drop. And Miami did try to get some pick and rolls early. They did try to get into some handoffs with Max Strus in particular early. And Derek White's just like, actually, no. You're just not getting off any of this clean. And there were so many possessions early on where it's Max Strus flying off of a pin down or just flying off of a handoff. And now he's doing the probe thing where he has the defender in jail and he's like 19 feet from the basket. I'm just like, wait a minute. Why is this turning into self-creator mode, Max Strus? This is not the action Miami intended to have. And I'm just like, if he's the one doing the dribbling stuff, that means Bam's hovering somewhere. Jimmy Butler's off the ball. Peter Tucker's also off the ball. Kyle Lowry's off the ball. Boston just kind of sinking in. I'm like, all right, cool. Do something. That's not where you want to be if you're Miami. So Boston deserves a lot of credit for dictating terms in that regard. You mentioned Robert Williams' impact. Miami couldn't do anything with him. There were quite a few drives where it's Bam Adebayo going downhill. Well, not quite a few for Bam, but that's a whole other thing. But we had some drives from Jimmy Butler trying to get into Robert Williams' chest. Tried to pump fake and get him in the air. Very disciplined. Couldn't get anything to go. PJ Tucker trying to hand the ball off, faking a handoff, getting downhill, trying to get to the push shot. It's a strong contest or a block. But Robert Williams just changed just about everything Miami wanted to do inside the arc.
My bad.
Keep cooking. It was just a very impressive defensive effort from Boston in the half court. And with Miami being so out of sorts offensively, that allowed Boston to get in transition. And even in the half court, their pace, their tempo was so much better than it was in game three. They drove the heck out of the basketball in game four. It was kind of similar to the game two, where Miami is just rotating every other possession. They're just in scramble mode. Jason Tatum's able to find a matchup, immediately gets downhill. Jaylen Brown gets a matchup, he gets downhill. Derek White scored the first, 9 points in this one, just being aggressive. Miami kind of lives with those, but it's just the collective, we're going. We're not holding it and waiting. We're not letting Miami load up with their help. We are going to go. We are going to drive. If we have a shot, we're going to take it all the way down. If we don't, we're going to kick it out. We're going to go again and again and again. And Miami could just never find their footing in that regard either. And I was just an impressive effort from Boston, period.
Well, yeah, I thought the drives and the decisiveness with the drives were huge. To your point, the blend of quick decisions plus we're not just doing it for the help to kick. We're actually trying to get all the way to the paint. Like there were possessions where Tatum had it either with a matchup or not. He would drive. And Miami was showing early help. He didn't stop. So now that early help turned into 3-4 people in the paint against him. Now you got to kick. Now next time he comes down, he drives, he gets a foul or he finishes. And that kind of kept Miami off balance a little bit in a different way. I thought Jaylen Brown was decisive. You know, when you're able to get, 31 made field goals, 32 free throws, that's a different element, especially with a Miami team that is really good defensively. Really good at taking away your actions and getting you in the mud. Well, a counter to that is being able to drive the ball. there's no real scheme for dribble penetration. If you can't keep the ball in front, your defense is going to be constantly rotating, and it's in a way that you can't necessarily dictate. So Boston did what they were supposed to in that regard. I thought some of the half-court offense process was still a little shaky to me, but it didn't matter so much because they were just ahead the entire time. Like, the entire time. Like, they just blitzed Miami. Blitzed them. And, like, in a way that they just took everything off the table immediately. They hit Bam. Mm-hmm. Try to get Jimmy involved. We're mixing back in what we did with the drop, so it's not as effective. And now Peyton Pritchard's on the floor. You want to try and attack him. Guess what we're doing? Kicking him out immediately.
Beautiful job on those scram switches.
Immediately. You want to put Bam? Nope. Jimmy, you want to come screen? Yeah, we'll give you the switch, but he's out of here. So now it's like, well, what do we do now? And so that's where I think Miami's guard play is going to be really important. You've got to take and make some of those pull-ups. You've got to try and loosen that drop up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you've got to try and find a way, find a spot where Robert Williams can't help so freely off PJ, and where PJ can now turn that help into something else. You know, even if it's just, I don't want to say Draymond-esque, but you see them try and swing it to PJ. He tries to go to a handoff. The problem is, who is he handing it off to? And is that someone that's going to make Boston react? And are they going to take and make that shot? Mm-hmm. So can you find the blend that way? Also, salute to Al Horford. He was on demon time. This man was full court pressing Bam Adebayo.
That was hilarious. You could tell he took the film session after game three, took that personally. Like, that's the actual MJ meme. Like, I took that personally. Because in game three, Bam, even after a made shot, Bam's getting the inbound, freely dribbling. He's not getting picked up until he's at the three-point line. And then he flows into a hand up, or he just gets downhill or gets into a pull-up jump or whatever. None of that in game four. And I think you said it during the watch party, like, Al Horford's just here. Just like, no, you're absolutely not doing anything on that front. While we're on Bam Adebayo.
Oh, here it is, folks. We've made it. We've arrived. We have arrived. I've been waiting for it. Everyone at home, can you spell AGGRESSIVE? Let's go.
Be aggressive. Be aggressive. But no, in all seriousness, there were so many instances of this man immediately turning away from the basket, looking for someone to hand the ball off to. And it's just like, brother, do you see what your aggression, or just, do you see the kind of tone that you set in game three? Because, like, as aggressive as Bam was, and he scored the 31, very efficient 31, it wasn't like Bam scored six and then Boston started doubling him. No. It wasn't even that. But, like, he set a tone, and that kind of emanated through the rest of the guys he was playing with. It also just kept him going. It gave Boston something else to worry about. Even if it wasn't a full-fledged, like, we're sending two to you now because we're scared of you, that's something else for them to account for. They can't send extra help, at the very least, elsewhere. And so for it just basically default back into, oh, here's an area for a pull-up. I'm just not going to take it. Let me get to the basket. I'm not going to challenge this guy at the rim. Let me look for a kick out. If I do get to the rim, I'm pumping two or three times to see if I can get someone in the air versus just going into someone's chest. There was just a lack of punch for Bam. And, like, it's easy to look at the shot attempts for him, but I think he finished with five, which that's unacceptable. But even beyond that, like, look at the basket. Look at the basket. No one else had it. No one else had it. Kurt Goldsberry pointed out, he put out the stat after the game. Miami starters, it's just, like, it's so bad, it's laughable. 18 points from the starting lineup for Miami. Lowest amount from a starting five in the playoffs since starters have been tracked in the 1970-71 season. Quite literally the worst playoff performance from a starting lineup scoring-wise. And what is that? Can I do math? 52 years? 51 years. How do you take? I'm sorry. Let me not be disrespectful. PJ Tucker took 4 shots. So you didn't take the fewest shots among the starting lineup. 5 shot attempts.
All right. Now, I'll balance you out a little bit.
Okay.
Well, because I've usually been on the train of Bam has a role, responsibility as far as a hub versus being aggressive. Does it change what the defense does? All that good stuff. The only thing I would probably point to with Bam is he's just got to develop a tell. Because you can tell when he's coming up with the intent to attack, bringing the ball up. And you can tell when he's coming up with the intent to distribute. And based on what Miami needed, some of that aggression would have helped. Some of the drives would have helped. Now, there were times I tried to get him to the post. Boston helped, which is a plus. But, hey, with what Miami was doing, with what they were facing, it was a little bit tougher. I don't think he got as much of the quote-unquote scheme looks as he did early in game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Even where it was just like, hey, Bam, you have to go make a play. There were a couple times early where, remember game 3, they were bring it up, base the floor, give him room to work with, he would attack. This game, he was coming up, looking to hand off. And with Jimmy back, you only have so many opportunities. If they're not going to necessarily call the sets for him to go to work,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes interesting because now you're just picking and rolling. And with the way Boston was defending, it didn't have the same impact. So now how does he put his stamp on it? And they need him. That's probably the biggest thing to move away from the aggression standpoint. They just need his offense. He has to be an impact guy to beat Boston. You have to make Horford some sort of a pressure point. And, you know, you have that game and the way Boston was defending, it's not a good combo. I just thought Boston was tough, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just even when they went to, hey, we'll have Kyle Lowry screen for you. We'll go inverted pick and roll. Al Horford's ducking all the way under. There's no coverage. There's no movement. No one has to move. Jimmy Butler has Robert Williams on him for a stretch. They go to a double mm-hmm. pick and roll. Robert Williams slides all the way under. That's where I'm like, huh, interesting. They're getting the drops. They're getting the unders. Now you got to find a seam. You know, can you get to drive and kick? Can you keep your flow up? Can you continue to put pressure on Boston's defense? Are you kind of going to bog down? And that's the story of this series, honestly. Which offense stays in the mud? And which team turns that into points on the other end? Because Boston was up 24. They shot less than 40% in the first half.
Yeah. Boston wasn't lighting the nets on fire. What Boston did do, if we were to talk about a change from game 3 to game 4, they took care of the basketball. You can afford to miss a bunch of shots when, hey, you're taking the shots to miss. Those aren't Miami's field goal attempts. And then also just getting busy on the offensive glass. 14 offensive rebounds for Boston. Robert Williams was a terror. They got all the extra stuff. And it's, I guess to be clear, like it should be more of a testament to what Boston was able to do on both ends, more so than what the heck Miami. But like there's still enough what the heck Miami to where I'm just like, what the heck Miami?
No, I get it. But again, this is 4 games and we've seen each team have insane defensive performances twice. Fair to say, right?
Yeah.
And so as many question marks as each offense has had to face, those defenses have wiped them off the map. They don't necessarily have the offenses to respond when that happens. I think that's fair to say. So to me, my head starts to shift. Is that the battle? Is that it? Is it just, have we solved them for this game? And now we move to the next one where hopefully we can do it again. Because if Miami's defense holds up during that run, who knows? It might be a different story. Fortunately, it was 20-1 or whatever it was. So
Miami's first made shot came at the 3:22 mark of the first quarter.
So yeah, whatever opportunity they had to scrap and claw their way back into it, probably lost there. Salute to Victor Oladipo, though.
Yes, that's the one.
He hit the turbo button. He was hitting the pull-ups. He was aggressive. He was trying to get there. You honestly didn't cuss him out.
Glad he made the cut. Man, wow. What a game of basketball we witnessed. Just crowd was booming in Boston, and rightfully so. Like, Miami just could not do anything like that. Talk about setting a tone. Boston did it. And like, I tweeted out mid first quarter, I'm like, oh, this is done already. Like, I just didn't see. They couldn't generate anything good. And when you have Jimmy Butler, who wasn't super aggressive early on and honestly didn't look right physically. So we'll keep an eye on that. Like, he didn't miss the second half of game three, dealing with the same knee swelling that he dealt with in the Atlanta series. So that's just something to keep an eye on. But when you have that going and he wasn't playing well when he did try to be aggressive, and you have the Bam thing where Boston took some stuff away and then also Daryl Pockets, they just didn't attack. You're asking a lot of Kyle Lowry. You're asking a lot of later Victor Oladipo, who, to his credit, he was up for it. He hashtag embraced the challenge on the offensive end. But, man, nobody else could really do anything. So I'm curious to see what Miami is able to do in game five. Because, like, the dribble penetration is bad. But I think that's something that could be tightened up to a degree. I think they could never really set themselves up. They felt like they were always trying to defend after a miss. And so even if it wasn't an immediate push for Boston, they were able to just get into their stuff so much quicker. So I think with slightly better offense, you see a better defensive output. And as you mentioned, like, it wasn't like Boston made 18 threes or something crazy and just bombed away.
No, I mean, as many concerns as you have about Miami going into the next game, this could still flip, because if Boston doesn't get this free throw game, doesn't get dribble penetration, turnovers come back, we're having a whole different conversation in the next one. And I think that's going to have to be the fun of the series, if you can find it, is which team does the thing. Great analysis, I know.
This is what we do. I'll ask one quick scheme thing before we move to the other series. How have you felt about Boston's offense against Miami zone? But we didn't see it in game one, and it's kind of been sprinkled in more and more as the series gone on.
I felt okay about it. Not enough to where Miami can't feel like it's an effective weapon. I think they've done little things to try and distort things. I think Horford's done some work as far as moving the ball, trying to drive. You've seen some cuts from Tatum from the wing to the elbow to try and get him an easier catch and distort the zone. I'm kind of in the middle on it. It seems like Miami's not really leaning on it, which I get. Mm-hmm. But I haven't been so blown away by what Boston's done against it to say, oh, they've beat the zone. I think it's still in the back pocket.
Okay, that's fair. I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, the numbers would say that they've been fine against it. Some of the shots that they've made against the zone have been very tough / late clock stuff, where Miami probably is like, okay, this is good process, tip your cap. But I go back to game three, the Marcus Smart and one early on, where it took like 7 different passes, a couple of driving kicks, and it ends with that. And it's like, well, that's technically 3 points out of that possession, but Miami grinded them down how they wanted to. So we'll see if the usage continues to perk up or not. Let's move to the Western Conference, in which the Dallas Mavericks find themselves down 3-0. Or actually, let me rephrase. The Golden State Warriors are up 3-0. They have taken it to Dallas. I have been super impressed with what Andrew Wiggins has done on both ends of the floor in this series. I've been massively impressed with what Stephen Curry has been able to do on both ends. The way that he has held up defensively throughout this entire postseason has been remarkable. He deserves his flowers for the work that he's doing on that end. Dallas has continued to try to hunt him out in pick and roll, and they just can't get the matchup. and when Dallas sees zone from Golden State, which we should dig into a little bit, but when Golden State throws out the zone, they're able to get the Steph Curry matchup some, but the help has been really good. Steph has held up his own and has done so without fouling. For you, like, what is the avenue for Dallas getting back in this series?
I mean, they've shown the avenue. They've shown the template. It's just a matter of doing it. You know, if you get 86 points from Luka, Brunson, and Dinwiddie, you should feel pretty good about your chances, but you also have to hit almost all the threes, and you have to defend at a higher level. And to me, that's where I credit Golden State more than I point at Dallas, because Golden State has done what they're supposed to do on both ends of the floor pretty consistently during this series. To have that defensive mindset, to be able to stick to your coverage, like Steph Curry, show and recover. Jordan Poole, show and recover. We're just going to keep doing that. And you got to think back to this run where Dallas was able to hurt Utah because we're going to get a mismatch drive. You're going to overhelp. We're going to play out of it. And then to hurt Phoenix with, we're going to go at Chris Paul, get the switch. You're going to help. We're going to start cutting. And now we're going to start posting up. And now everything's going to change as the series goes on. Golden State hasn't shifted.
Mm-hmm.
No, show and recover. Show and recover every time. You're going to get us. You're going to ding us. We're going to keep doing it. And once you feel like you're in a rhythm, hey, zone's coming out. You have guys like Draymond and sometimes even Clay guarding Jalen Brunson to where, hey, we're going to try and just contain your penetration.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to switch, we're going to switch and play off you. And your counter is going to be the pull-up, but we're going to try and keep you out of the paint. You have the impact of Kevon Looney as far as being able to switch on multiple people, being able to protect the rim. And then the irony is Golden State does so much work this series to show and recover and not give Dallas the switches. They go to zone and they give Dallas the matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Steph Curry. You can have him. But we're in zone. So the help's already built in. We're standing here. So yeah, you're going to create a look. It's not necessarily a look that you want. And that's where I'm trying to workshop the idea and talk through it. Because Dallas is still being able to create looks and they're getting looks, but what kind of looks they're getting? They're having to work really hard for these. It takes multiple driving kicks. And they haven't necessarily been able to find the lineup to make Golden State pay consistently. You know, when it comes to Luka, Golden State just hasn't let him lead the dance. And pick and roll, we're switching. If we're in zone, help's coming. If we're not in zone, help might come. It might not. But you're not necessarily going to dictate terms to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a rhythm changer for a Dallas team that has been able to lean on that kind of creation during this run. It's just the rhythm just and reads just don't feel the same. They're working for them, but it just doesn't feel the same. It's tough.
It's a lack of flow, and I credit what Golden State's been able to do. Like, one, they're bleeding the clock against Dallas. Dallas isn't helping themselves, but and this is a point that Kurt Goldsberry made on recent episode of the Low Post, like the full court pressure that Andrew Wiggins is giving to Luka. Like just that simple thing. It's not like he's forced them into a bunch of bad court turnovers, but if he's crossing half court and there's 17 on the clock already and your first screen comes at 14 and now you have to see like what Golden State is doing. You're trying to attack Steph. That's a hedge and recover. You're trying to see now Luka's just holding, seeing if he can get the quick slip to Dorian Finney-Smith or whoever Steph is guarding and trying to work something from there. Then someone recovers to the middle of the floor to kick out. And then it's, oh, well, crap. Now there's 7 on the clock. Luka do something for us. Jalen Brunson do something for us. It's just, it's a tough scene for Dallas right now. And it feels like whenever they are able to find a rhythm, whenever Luka's able to get 2 or 3 drives in a row where he touches the paint and makes a kick. Because he had some solid drives in game 3 and some wild passes to the corner and all of those shots missed, which is just unfortunate. Like a lot of this is make or miss. But even when Dallas has those positions, like, okay, cool. Luka's getting downhill a little bit. Let's throw in some zone. Spencer Dinwiddie, who was freaking phenomenal in game 3. that in the first quarter, early second quarter stretch where they Golden State could not keep him out of the paint. Dope. Ha, here's some zone. Or Dallas goes to, you know, the deeper bench lineup and, okay, here's Frank Ntilikina. Cool. We have a help point now. That's not working. Here's Josh Green. Cool. We have a help point now. You bring in Davis Bertans and Golden State counters with, okay, we're not playing Damian Lee anymore because that's been the help point for you. Here's Moses Moody. We trust this guy now. And now it's, oh, now it's Davis Bertans against Moses Moody. This is a little bit different. Let's put him on Kevon Looney. Oh, wait, Kevon Looney is setting a bunch of picks and rolling. Or he's doing the hub thing. Or he's flowing into handoffs. Or they're doing that very specific action that bugs you when teams fall for it. Oh, now Davis Bertans is all in this action now.
Yeah.
Golden State has a pressure point. That's a problem. And what's more problematic for Dallas is that they need Davis Bertans in the shooting because Maxi Kleber has fallen off the face of the earth from three. After shooting well over 40% from three in the first two rounds, now he can't hit any. There was foul trouble in game one. He hasn't really had that in the last two games, but he can't knock down a shot. So the five out lineups, well, the best five out lineup for Dallas with some semblance of defense, it's not hitting the same because they're quite literally not hitting the same. And so you get to the end of game three where they're trying to juice that a little bit more with Davis Bertans, and like you immediately feel that on defense. Golden State has their best lineup out there. You have Bertans at the five. And it's just like, oh, well, if we now it's extra pressure. If we don't hit this shot, Golden State is absolutely getting a good look on the other end of the floor. No doubt in my mind. They will just run their regular stuff. And again, it's him on Looney. So he's just in the action. Or, you know what? Let's just go mismatch. Let's see if we can do some off-ball stuff and then flow into a pick and roll. Let's see if we can get Bertans on a switch. Now he's guarding Klay Thompson. Now he's guarding Jordan Poole. And bless Dave Burt, he's trying, but he's a bit overtaxed. And it just looks like they are, in game three, at the very least, they just looked kind of dead in the water from like an energy standpoint. Between the rim attacks, Golden State mixing things up, how hard they have to work on offense, how hard they're already having to work on defense just because of how much motion is in Golden State's offense. And then you zoom out and factor in six game series against Utah, seven games against Phoenix, and now you go into this. And it's just a lot. Reggie Bullock just had an offer from everywhere. Maxi Kleber couldn't hit anything. Like, it's just Dorian Finney-Smith is doing everything he can. He's chilling in the corner. He's cutting from the corner. He's trying to operate in the middle of the zone when Golden State goes to it. He's operating as a screener a bunch because Steph has had him sometimes. He also has to chase Steph. Sometimes he has to defend Jordan Poole. Sometimes he's chasing Klay Thompson. It's a lot for Dallas right now.
Well, I mean, I think the big takeaway, just to add on to what you stated, is just how much the Warriors are making Dallas work on both ends of the floor. Like, even if you watch on Dallas's drives in the last game, help is there. Help is there. They're recovering. Golden State's flying around, and you see Dallas looking for the kick. It's not automatic. They're looking for the kick. You see Luka getting to more rejects as a counter. I'm just going to beat you before the screen comes. Mm-hmm. That takes effort, though. Like, you want that to be a counter. You don't want that to be the thing.
Yeah.
And then what Golden State's doing on the other end, just really unique challenge. Steph Curry's paint touches and his drives have been very, very important. And he's hurting Dallas in pick and roll. And, hey, it's cool. Do you want to try and keep me on the side? Ice it. I'm just going to keep driving. I got to roll. You're going to have to stay with me at some point. You want to come up to the level, turn the corner real quick one time. Then I'll hit a three real quick.
I was about to say, or it's just the in and out. And
yeah, pull up. Yeah, pretty much. So it's like, you haven't necessarily figured that out. That's a different challenge that you faced. That's no disrespect to Donovan Mitchell or Chris Paul. It's just, this is a guy who can pull up from deep, cut off the ball, and also drive by you. And he's doing all three of them at different times. That's tough. Golden State has stuck with the movement, which again provides a different challenge for Dallas, as we've talked about in this whole series. it's harder to lock in when you don't know exactly what's going to happen. When they can literally just throw the ball to Kevon Looney in the post, and now Clay screens for Steph, and now you're in rotation. Well, there you go. Like, that's not, they didn't call anything. They just started playing. You have Draymond on the short roll. That's a different piece. Looney having impact on roles. That's different. So you get that whole blend, and it's like a curveball. So you're working defensively to try and contain them. You're having to work on offense to try and create open looks. It's a lot. It is a lot. And that's where I salute Golden State. And sometimes you hit a series like this where a team just is going to take your best, accept it, and you have to keep doing it over and over and over again. And even when you do it, it may not matter. That team's still there. The series gives me, like, do I want to say it? I don't want to say it. Don't let me say the thing.
Say the thing. What do you mean? This is a safe adjacent space. What do you mean?
Safe adjacent, he says. What does that even mean? What is safe adjacent?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. I see the trap. This reminds me of Grizzly Spurs conference final. We got swept. We lost two of those games in overtime. And the third by seven. Spent the next 4 months telling everyone that I knew that was the closest sweep you'll ever see, which sounds insane. But sometimes it's like, dang, we just couldn't do the thing. It was right there. We knew the thing we had to do, and then we would do it, and then they would also respond. It's like, well,
what do we do now?
Bleep.
We are keeping the clean rating on the dunker spot, folks. But no, to that point, like, that's what game two felt like. Like, game one, what was it, 11 of 34 from three for Dallas in that game one? And then game two, it's like, okay, the rim pressure is better. The looks are a little bit cleaner. This is nice. And then they made more threes, but it still wasn't enough. And then it just kind of fell apart in the second half, particularly the fourth quarter of the game, where it's just like, oh, great. Golden State's doing the thing where they're hitting big shots and the crowd's going crazy. We need a good look. No, this is a 7-second possession because we drove and then we kicked it and it's a contested three and now they're in transition again. Oh, no, this is snowballing. Oh, no, we were up double digits. Now we're down seven. This isn't great. And I think I tweeted it out, like, this felt like game three was probably the best rim pressure game for Dallas of the series. And it just didn't matter. Which, again, if Maxi Kleber and Reggie Bullock are just going to miss literally every three they take, like, at a certain point, like, that's just kind of the thing. But even to that point, there's just so much pressure on them to do that. On top of what they're being asked to do defensively. Like, Reggie's being, like, he's, talk about it, Andrew Wiggins picking up Luka full court to kind of bleed the clock. Like, Reggie's trying to do that on the other end of Steph. And Steph will either just run him into a screen or just like, okay, cool, let me just toss this to Kevon. Or let's just toss this to Draymond Green. I'm going to run around for the next 10 seconds. I may get the ball, I may not. I may set a screen, I may not. May relocate, may not. Have fun with that. And it just adds up, man. And I say this as someone that picked Dallas in seven for this series, like the tapes out there, because I felt like, okay, Dallas can find a template. I think they can win the paint battle. I think they can get enough paint touches, generate enough threes, knock down enough shots. Lucas had 240 pieces, and it hasn't really moved the needle like that. Dallas has generated a bunch of threes and they haven't made enough of them. And as far as the paint battle is concerned, again, it's 2 feet in the paint, but even then they're not getting super clean looks at the rim. It's getting to the paint enough to generate those threes. Meanwhile, Golden State is blitzing them at points in the paint right now. Steph's drives are hurting. We just saw what Andrew Wiggins did to Luka, which, that isn't indicative of an entire series for Wiggins in particular, but, like, Jesus Christ, what a dunk. We should talk about it a little bit. But the Steph drives, the Looney rolls, Draymond doing enough on short roll, Jordan Poole getting downhill. Like, Dallas can't miss threes on one end and then also lose the paint points battle when they have, in theory, the best driver in the series. They should have three of the top five drivers in the series.
Yeah, yeah. Golden State, like, containing Dallas dribble penetration while also driving on the other end is not really where I thought this series was going to go.
Yeah. And then there are the offensive rebounds, which you work hard enough on those defensive possessions. The fact that you are doing all of this work on both ends and then you also can't end possessions either. Dallas was the worst rebounding team heading into playoffs in game three. And then Golden State was just like, we're just going to get all of the offensive rebounds. Andrew Wiggins had 11 rebounds in game three. Six of them were offensive. Kevon Looney had four offensive rebounds. It's just a lot for Dallas.
No, that's what, again, that's where I credit Golden State for putting it all together at the right time. They're a team playing on a mission. And it's a tough blend for Dallas, you know? Because we talked about the template in the lead up to the series. And you've kind of seen your team have the success with the 3-point shooting, have a game where you get all three of your guys unlocked, and you don't walk away with a result.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, is play better really the adjustment? Because we kind of did some of that. And, you know, but it's still a salute to Dallas for me. No one had them here. You know, I think Golden State has been awakened in a way we hadn't seen in the first two series.
Mm.
You saw moments where they gave Denver life. You saw when Ja went down, it was a whole different series there for a little bit. And for them to come in locked in and say, hey, you know what?
This is where we draw the line.
They're not going away. We got to put them away. And so to kind of see the progression and like, because Dallas clearly seeing this run, not the team you want to just hang around with. Like, we could talk about the struggles, the limitations of the roster, but once they find something and they continue to play with belief, you are in a dogfight. You're in a dogfight with the team that has Luka. So that was one of the most impressive parts to me.
Man, and just shout out to Luka for this run. Period. Like, man, the Warriors up 3-0, but we haven't seen a team come back from 3-0. Like, I think it's fair to assume that the series is going to go to Golden State, barring something ridiculous happening. I don't know if it's going to be a sweep. I don't know if it's 5 or if it gets pushed to 6. But at any rate, this is just not the series where I'm just like, let's call Luka a fraud for some reason. Because Golden State has done this. Like, we don't need to turn. It doesn't have to go there. Luka's been great. There are some things for Luka to work on heading into the offseason. We can acknowledge one without it turning into something it doesn't need to turn into. Like, this is more a testament to Golden State more than Dallas stinks.
No, yeah, that shouldn't be the takeaway. This team fought to earn the spot, and that's part of making a run to the conference finals. And now it's going to be interesting to see how do they take this? How do they take that loss in particular, where your guys had some success? Can you come back at home and try and rally and try and find something defensively to get Golden State in the mud? Because part of it is Golden State just refusing to kind of do the things that Dallas needs them to do to make this a series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what they haven't really just stuck with, hey, we're only going to do this offensively. No, Golden State's come with the blend. You got to deal with pick and roll, off ball. You got to deal with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Can Dallas get them in that mud? And then use what they're doing offensively to their advantage? You never know. But it's a tough hole to climb out of, and Golden State looks ready. Especially Andrew Wiggins. Look, man, they had to review that dunk on principle. On principle. There's no way. No way. No way. Sorry.
That's insane. That's insane. Are you taking Dak dunk or the one he had in the Memphis series?
Ooh. Yes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. If you have not joined the Dunker Spot community on Twitter, please do so if you have the capability to do so. I know they're still rolling out the feature. I don't know what's taking so long, but that's well above my pay grade. Anyway, search Dunker Spot, join, have some fun with us. Good discussions in there, good banter in there. We're hosting watch parties. We're watching games where there's even more banter. So that's a whole lot of fun. Do that if you aren't already. And with that, we'll catch y'all later in the week.
Man, I had a big agenda and everything. All right.